Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. The MSS crew is here welcoming you back to the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. The day's date is Saturday, March 28th, 2015. And this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you and kicking off another exhilarating and exciting internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, as I promised last week, we are back again doing what we do best, and that is hooking you up with the highest quality OTR surprises that are within our capabilities to produce. Folks, spring has sprung. Hopefully, it's getting nice and warm where you guys are living, and we can finally switch from the hot drinks and snacks to maybe the cold drinks and snacks, because, as you all know, summer is soon to come. Without any further delays, please allow me to introduce the presenter for tonight's program. And he just so happens to be the second of our Canadian dynamic duo, straight from the Badlands, Mad Max Crawford. Yep, he's back again, doing something that he enjoys really much, and that is providing you with OTR surprises. So, if everyone could just please sit back, grab your favorite drinks and snacks, and enjoy the program. Mad Max, the microphone is yours.
Hi, everybody. This is Maxwell here to welcome you to Michael's Saturday Surprise for this wonderful March 28th weekend. We're going to hear an hour of ghost stories. The first little short clip we're going to hear is from Troll Records, and it's Spooky Scary Stories. Story number two, and dark, dark, dark.
Why is it when the night comes, the whole world seems spooky, scary, horrible, and frightening? Is it because it's dark? Or is it because there's something out there, in the dark? Who knows? I don't. Do you know that sound? I don't. Is that someone coming, or something? I don't know. Is that a bird, or some lost ghost? I don't know. What are all those sounds, all those things, all those sounds that live in the dark? I don't know. But if you want to find out, come with me. It's a dark, dark night. And we're walking down a dark, dark road. And the dark, dark trees make dark, dark shadows. And the shadows look as though they're living. Living? No, they look like... I don't know. But are they trees? Trees don't sound like that. Do they? And there, back from the dark, dark road, is an old, dark, dark house. And the house has a dark, dark door. And the house is dark. Dark.
Hello? Hello?
Is anything home? The halls are dark. Dark. And all the rooms are dark, dark. And the stairs are dark, dark. There, in the corner, a dark, dark corner, is a dark, dark chest. And when I open it, out jumps a dark, dark... ghost!
Well, folks, that was from Troll Records, Spooky Scary Stories, story number 2. Dark, dark, dark. I hope it set the mood for the rest of the evening, because we have some interesting stories coming your way. Our first story is from The Weird Circle, and this is, coincidentally enough, episode number 2, called The House and... The Brain.
We are met in this cave by the restless sea to reveal the horror in man's mind. Listen to the Weird Circle. Listen to the waves. Listen closely. For you will hear the crying of lost souls. Our story discloses the horror in man's mind. This is a tale of the house and the brain. Come with me to London, through the heavy fog of the city, to a large house in the suburbs. A young couple enter the portals of that house to attend an art auction.
Well, hello, Jim. We've been looking all over for you. We've got quite a crowd here today.
Paul Whitney, Sandra, I'm glad you've come. I thought you two were refugees from this sort of thing.
Well, frankly, Jim, I've suddenly conceived a passion for good oil paintings, and I'm going to buy this fabulous painting of the ancient cutthroat.
Well, to tell you the truth, Jim, she suddenly conceived a passion for cutthroats, ancient or otherwise.
Oh, my husband abuses me.
I'm too nice to her, or she'd never be interested in any other man.
But, darling, the man in the portrait's been dead 400 years.
Dead or living, he's not beyond your charms.
But my husband loves me, Jim. Must be my fatal fascination.
Yes.
But I didn't come here to talk with you, even if it is fun. I came here to see that oil painting.
Oh, it's quite a painting.
Yes, so we've heard.
It's in my study. Come and take a look before the auction starts.
Hmm? Now, don't fall in love with it, Sandy. No matter how you feel about 15th century reprobates, I'm not going to spend a fortune buying useless pictures.
Well, there's the picture. What do you think?
He has a face you'll never forget.
And a reputation. Yes, sir, he lived a full life. You know, he was supposed to have been fabulously wealthy. But when he died, his fortune disappeared.
Oh, my dumpling aunt. He looks like the kind of man who sticks pins in people for the devil of it.
Sandra.
The strangest thing about the picture is the man's eyes. You get the feeling that the eyes are alive.
Yes, very definitely. Clever work.
Paul.
What's the matter with you, Sandra?
I could have sworn I've seen that man in London recently.
What man?
The one in the picture.
What? He's been dead 400 years.
Stop snickering at me, Jim. I know what I've seen.
Impossible. The only thing left of the Honorable Cutthroat Richards is the house on Orchard Street. He built it 450 years ago, and it's never been really habitable since.
Why?
Well, this is your chance to laugh at me. It's haunted.
Haunted?
Oh, not really.
Really?
Oh, Jim, Jim, I've never met a ghost.
And you never will, Sandra.
Jim, oh, Jim, please, please, oh, please, imagine a really, truly ghost.
Wonderful, Jim, take us over. Or better yet, I'll rent the place for a week. I've heard a lot about ghosts, but I've never been able to pin one down. You know, I've been a student of the occult for a long time.
Jim, 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 please.
Oh, Sandra, I'm serious. It's dangerous business, this ghost hunting.
Please, fella, anything to get Sandra's mind off buying that picture.
Very well, but you'll find some very real ghosts over there. The housekeeper, Mrs. Browning, will rent you a room if you want one. But she's the only person who's ever been able to stay in the old house.
Thanks, old man. Come along, Sandra.
But the picture.
Hang the picture, my sweet. I've got a genuine ghost for you. Open all by itself.
There's no one there. Doors aren't supposed to open by themselves, Paul.
Well, what do you expect? The house is haunted, isn't it? Door slammed by itself, too.
Woo! Tricky place, isn't it?
You frightened?
Not in the least. And it isn't my knees that are shaking, pet. It's yours. Wonder where the housekeeper is. Her name's Mrs. Browning. Call her and see what happens.
All right. Mrs. Browning!
Don't poke me, Paul.
I didn't poke you.
Well, I didn't poke myself. Oh, hey. I wonder if we're alone. Look behind me, Paul. If it's a ghost, I don't want to meet it quite yet.
Silly, it's broad daylight. Anybody knows ghosts never appear until nightfall.
Paul, Paul, look. It's the child's footprint right there in front of me. A wet footprint.
Great heavens.
No, another one. Looks like the footprint of a child who's taken a bath. Oh, my chubby aunt.
Listen.
The footprints lead upstairs.
Shall we follow?
Well, it's the obvious thing to do.
Ghastly cold in here, Sandy, isn't it?
Ghostly cold, at any rate.
You're not quite up to form, old girl. You sure you want to go through with this?
No, I'm positive. Almost, anyway.
Sandy, the footprints. They disappear.
Maybe it's all done with mirrors.
Good afternoon. Do come in the sitting room.
Oh, you must be Mrs. Browning. I'm Sandra Whitney, and this is my husband.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Danvers told me you were coming. Won't you be seated?
Thank you, Mrs. Browning.
I hope my stepdaughter didn't frighten you.
Your stepdaughter? Well, I didn't see anyone.
Naturally. She's dead.
You mean the footprints we saw?
Yes, of course. You didn't see or hear anything else?
No.
Expecting anyone?
Yes. They're coming for me shortly. My time is up, and I must die in the way they've planned it.
They?
Those who live in this house, Mrs. Whitney.
Oh, come, Mrs. Browning, you don't really believe ghosts actually live here.
Believe it? I know it. You see, Mr. Whitney, when I was first married 40 years ago, my husband, my stepdaughter, and myself moved into this house. They were here then.
Why didn't you move out?
Oh, we became used to them. Then my stepdaughter died. My husband had an unfortunate accident, and I was left alone.
You've lived here alone ever since?
Yes. Waiting for them to take me.
Mrs. Browning, how much will you charge my wife and myself for an apartment here by the week?
Charge? Nothing. Nothing at all. Anybody who has the courage to stay here is most welcome. But I advise you against it. Listen.
What is it?
Souls crying for release. Release from him.
Oh, come, Mrs. Browning.
You don't believe me? You will when you move in. When can I expect you?
Tonight at 8. How about it, Paul?
That sounds jolly.
You'll use the east wing. I'll have a fire lit for you. But let me warn you once again. They'll be waiting for you, day and night.
Sandra, you all back?
Of course, Paul. Down, Blackie. Down, I say. Oh, if you keep squirming, I'll never get you on a leash.
I'd better take some pistols along with us.
Well, I'm not at all sure you can shoot a ghost, Paul.
I'm not at all sure it is a ghost. Something awfully phony about all that.
Oh, no. My intuition says there were ghosts in that house, darling, and I've a very perceptive intuition.
Sandra, you're not going to take Blackie with you.
Well, of course I am. He's a watchdog, isn't he?
But a dog...
Now, darling, remember how nicely he caught pheasant last year.
But pheasant aren't the same thing as ghosts at all.
Stuff and nonsense. You ready?
All ready. Here's your coat, dear.
Oh, look out the window, Paul. So peaceful out there.
You've always been partial to twilight.
Oh, reminds me of the time you courted me. It was such a nice time. Paul, that man, the one on the street.
What man?
The one standing right out there. Look at him. That's the same man whose portrait we saw at Jim Danvers' house today.
Sandra, Sandra, where are you going?
To talk to him, Pat, of course. Whoop, 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 whoop. Miss Richards. Oh, my chubby aunt. It is him. Oh, excuse me, sir. I couldn't help noticing you and...
You noticed me?
You are Mr. Richards, aren't you?
I've been known to many by many names.
Oh, dear, please pardon me if I'm rude, but... Well, how in the devil did you manage to stay alive for 400 years?
You will notice my eyes. Look deep. Deep.
Oh, let me go. Let me go.
Deeply into my eyes.
Of greater power, greater than death.
You've never seen me before. You don't know me. You can never remember me again.
Walking, Sandra. I hope you're properly ashamed of yourself, approaching strange men and asking them silly questions.
Well, I'm sorry, Paul. It was stupid of me, but anybody can be wrong.
Of course they can, but on the face of it, it was silly. Expecting a man who was alive 400 years ago to be roaming around loose.
It wasn't a matter of looseness, Pet. It was a matter of liveness. Now, come on, stop being a husband and hold my arm.
I ought to tear it off and beat you over the head with it.
He's so virile. But I love him.
Well, come along, Sandy. There's your haunted house ahead. We don't want to keep Mrs. Browning waiting.
Or the ghost.
That door again.
Insidious feeling doors opening and slamming.
Mrs. Browning! Mrs. Browning!
I'm in the east wing, Mr. Whitney, just lighting the fire.
You better go on up. This hall's drafty.
Hey, Paul, more than cold in here. It's almost as if something or somebody is draining your body of all warmth.
That's a pleasant thought, Sandy. Now that you've scared yourself stiff, move.
Well, I was just getting in the mood for ghosts. Where's the east wing?
This way, Mrs. Whitney.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Browning. Well, this room looks cheerful.
It's as gay as my mood. Nice fire, nice candles. Quiet, quiet, Blackie. You'll scare somebody.
A dog scare somebody? Not tonight. They came tonight.
What came tonight?
You see. Better make yourselves at home while you can.
Blackie, sit down. Over here, Blackie. Look at him, Paul. The hairs on his head are standing on end.
Be quiet, Blackie.
Blackie!
Look! I told you they were here.
A luminous mass. A blue mass. Sandy, be careful.
It's materializing.
Coming for me. I knew it. Coming for me.
Oh, Mrs. Browning, Paul. Fingers are choking her. Good heavens.
Mrs. Browning.
Paul, Paul, stop this horrible
thing. Sandy. Sandy. Sandy.
It's horrible.
It's all right, Sandy. All right, darling.
Oh, it's gone, hasn't it?
Yes. It's gone. But Mrs. Browning, she's...
it. mind, Joe.
Quiet, please. Quiet.
Please.
Quiet.
You don't even believe it.
Quiet! Mr. Danvers, I'm going to reconstruct the scene of the crime. Nobody tells Detective Hodges that a flesh-and-blood woman gets bumped off by a ghost.
But I saw it myself. Oh, be quiet, Blackie. If you'd only relax, Detective Hodges, and go away, we'd catch the ghost for you.
Quiet!
I'm only trying to help, but Blackie, stop!
Sandra, you're only confusing the issue.
Paul's right, Sandra. Sit down over here.
Jim Danvers, if you side with Paul, I'll never speak to you.
Now, Mr. Whitney, if you don't mind, we'll go over the details again. What happened?
Well, Mrs. Whitney and I were here in this room with Mrs. Browning when a blue mass suddenly floated in the door. The lights in the fireplace dimmed, the candles were extinguished, and Mrs. Browning began to scream.
Why?
Because she saw a ghost. It's really all so simple.
Sandra, my dear.
And then what happened?
The mass suddenly materialized, at least sufficiently for us to see two hands.
Two hands without a body.
The hands reached out, grasped Mrs. Browning by the throat, and...
That was that.
Thank you, Mrs. Whitney. I suppose you expect me to believe that story?
There's no reason for you to doubt Mr. Whitney's word, Detective Hodge.
I'm not saying there is. But there was only three people in this room, and one of them is dead. Everybody's under arrest. Everybody, do you hear?
Oh, Paul, it's here again.
Look, Detective Hodge. Paul, Sandra.
Oh, Paul, for heaven's sake.
What is it?
An axe murderer. An ectoplasm.
Sandra, don't be funny.
Let's get out of this house before it gets all of us.
It's gone.
Yes, it's gone. Now do you believe us, Detective Hodge?
Yes. Yes, I believe you. I'll have Mrs. Browning's body removed to the morgue right away.
Paul, if you insist on staying in this house overnight, I'll not be responsible for what happens.
But, Jim, I'm convinced that there are no such things as ghosts. Now, please, Jim, take Sandra back home and leave me.
I'm not budging without you, Pat.
Sandra, don't be foolish.
Well, no matter what you two do, I'm not staying here.
Oh, go, old Fuzzy Beard. Take thy tired body and deliver it to a safe, warm bed. Poor Jim. Scared of a little ghost. It's 11 p.m. already.
Well, good night, Paul, Sandra.
Nighty-night, Jim.
What was that?
You mean the footfalls?
Yes, what is it?
The housekeeper's dead stepdaughter.
You see? It's all so simple.
Good grief. Good night.
Oh, we've been all through the house. Paul and I'm dead tired. Come on, let's go to bed.
You go to bed. I'll sit up and read these letters we found in the attic.
Here, Blackie, come here, come here. Now lie down next to me. There, poor Blackie, poor doggy. You don't like the ghosties, do you, Pat? Poor Blackie.
Hey, this letter's interesting.
What is it?
Evidently a letter from the housekeeper to her husband. A love letter. She talks about her brother's child. It seems her brother left his money to his daughter and she handled the estate for the child.
That's jolly. Maybe that's the child she calls her stepdaughter.
Let's see what it says. Listen. Since we have managed the child's end, you and I are more than lovers. We are partners in many things.
Sounds as if they murdered the child.
Yes, it does. Sandra, I wonder if my theory's right. If people felt strong passions, and if those passions linger in a house after the people have gone, couldn't that create a heavy psychic atmosphere?
Well, those fingers that murdered Mrs. Browning were more than heavily psychic. Unhook the collar of my dress, Paul.
Where'll I put the letters down on the dressing table here?
Just a top hook.
Better keep these pistols handy just in case. Something about a gun that gives me courage. Funny.
Oh, it's midnight. I'm tired and nothing's funny.
You know Mrs. Browning's sitting room? It seems to be an extra addition to this house. It juts out from the rest of the building like a sleeping porch.
What's funny about that?
Well, that horrible cold and the footfalls all seem to emanate from that room.
Oh, you and your logical mind. Oh.
What's the matter, Sandy?
Oh, look. The fire's dimming.
Oh. Oh.
Just like a great black shadow standing in front of it.
Give me my gun.
Here, dear. Shh, Blackie, shh.
Look, Sandy. A hand. reaching out from the wall.
The letters. It's got the letters.
Great Scott.
Oh, my chubby aunt.
Watch it.
It's the hand of the housekeeper.
How do you know?
It's got the same ring on she had on this afternoon. If that's not a ghost, I've never seen one.
The fire's going out, Sandra.
Ah!
Sandra!
It's all around us!
Sandra! Sandra! Oh!
Your will against mine, my will is greater.
No.
Succumb, succumb. My will is greater.
No, you're a shadow.
And you are a mere mortal who knows no secrets beyond the veil. I control the world of shadows. Succumb, fool, succumb.
No, no, go away. You're nothing but an image.
You will die by my command in this house. You will die before morning. Admit my will.
No, no, I will not admit your will. Sandra, you're safe now on your own. Just lie still, darling, and drink this.
Oh, Paul.
I was a fool to allow you to stay in that accursed place last night. I ought to have my head examined.
I came over as soon as I got your message, Paul.
Oh, come on in, Jim. Sandra's recovering from a bit of a shock.
Yes, I heard about it. I warned you, Paul, that house is definitely haunted. I'm going to board it up. It's completely useless.
No, that's not the answer, Jim. It isn't ghosts. At least, not in the real sense of the word.
Why, Paul, after what you went through, you say that?
It's too malignant for a ghost. Do you believe in the power of hypnotism?
Well, I've heard some amazing theories about it anyway.
Well, I believe some power controls that house.
Well, that's still ghosts.
No, because the brain that controls the house is still alive. I'm convinced of it.
Well, where do you think this man who controls the house is?
He might be thousands of miles away. Remember you said that the eyes in the picture of the fabulous Richards seems alive?
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Not at all. In some crazy mad manner, Richards has kept himself alive all these 400 years. In some hypnotic way, he controls that house.
Well, if your theory is right, how can we break his control?
Well, I'm certain that his control emanates from the little sitting room which once belonged to Mrs. Browning.
Yes.
Now, if you'll let me, I'd like to hire workmen and tear that room off the rest of the house.
Oh, but Paul,
the room is only an extra addition, Jim. It can't do any harm to try.
Okay, pull up more of that flooring.
Did you hurt yourself climbing that partition, Sandra?
No. Oh, imagine a secret room down here, Paul, right beneath the sitting room. You see, Jim, Paul was right. That's like finding a box with a false bottom.
That's all for now, boys.
Careful of your head, Sandra. This room isn't very big.
But it's as cold as cold storage.
Well, now you know how a hunk of beef feels in an icebox.
That's gay.
A musty old room. Bed and four walls.
And two drawers built into the wall over there.
All modern conveniences.
Try to open them. They look rusty. Just pull.
All right. There. The drawer's open.
Oh, nothing but a lot of musty old clothes.
Listen, Paul.
Nothing unusual, Jim. Just the same footfalls we've been hearing all along.
I'm beginning to become quite fond of them.
Look, here.
Why, it's a miniature painting.
Yes, a painting of Mr. Richards. Look at it. The same face as that painting in my house.
Look at the eyes in the miniature. Paul, they're alive.
Great heavens.
They're moving. You better put that portrait down, Paul.
Yes, they are alive. Living matter in a painting.
Oh, Paul, it's getting colder in here all the time. I feel faint. Faint and... is this something... unearthly, he's moving around.
Open the next drawer, Paul. Hurry, I don't like this growing cold at all.
It won't budge. No, the blasted thing. Oh, there it is.
Why, Paul, there's a thin china saucer full of crystal liquid with a compass floating on it.
That's a strange thing. There's an inscription written in the drawer.
What's it say?
As this compass moves, so my will dominates everything within these four walls. Everything dead or alive. Accursed be the house and restless the dwellers therein.
What's it mean?
This is the brain, Sandra.
Oh.
Richards controls this instrument through hypnotism. He can control a piece of paper or a chair or even the souls of the dead.
Then this house is haunted.
Yes, haunted by a malicious, malignant will. It keeps a man's spirit roving restlessly after death.
Paul, Paul, look! Look in that corner!
Mr. Richards, you... you are alive.
Yes, alive, quite alive, because I've will to live.
Very clever deduction, Mr. Whitney.
Deduction?
Yes, I heard your keen analysis of my activities.
You are a hypnotist, then.
I have been powerful for 400 years. Your blind stumbling onto my secret will not stop me now. I can will anything. I will the specters of the past to re-enter this room.
In heaven's name, man, stop this.
Oh, that black shadow. It's here with us, closing in.
Yes, closing in. All those who have died in this house are my slaves, as you will be my slaves in a very few brief seconds.
You are not the brain controlling this house. You gave that power to this compass. You transferred your power to this moving needle. Am I right, Mr. Richards?
Put that compass down!
Oh, no, I'll destroy it, Mr. Richards! Now, you're completely powerless to harm us.
Watch out, Paul! This partition's gonna crumble!
Paul!
Sandra!
Gosh, Paul, it's good to be back in our own home.
What happened to Mr. Richards when the partition collapsed, Jim?
Well, the workmen searched the debris around the house for Mr. Richards' body, but no trace of him was found. I'm afraid that he escaped.
Oh, no.
You mean he's still alive and free, Jim?
Yes, indeed. That's just what I mean.
Well, he won't be for long, Sandra. People everywhere will be warned, and every corner of this earth will be looking for him. Even his will can't defy the world, Sandra. No one man can ever fight the world.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have recalled the house and the brain. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
That was The Weird Circle, The House and the Brain, episode number 2. We don't know the air date or anything about that, but it was a great show. And now let's go on to our next interesting ghost story. Here it is from Suspense and Devilstone, as aired on September the 30th, 1962. Enjoy!
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act One of Devilstone, starring Christopher Carey and Neil Fitzgerald, and written especially for Suspense by Jonathan Bundy. This portion of Suspense is brought to you by the makers of Parliament Cigarettes.
Listen, more and more people are smoking to this tune every day.
Extra margin, Parliament gives you extra margin. The filter screen test and made to stay honey clean. Quarter inch away, Parliament gives you extra margin. Parliament gives you extra margin. You're smoking neat, you're smoking clean with Parliament today.
My name is Martin, Timothy Martin. I live here in Dublin, and very nicely too, thanks to a considerable inheritance and sale of the family estate in County Kilkenny, which bought a very good price. I have a comfortable cottage, a faithful manservant by the name of Evetts, and everything else I need to live an easy, contented life, and without the need of applying myself to any sort of labor. Even my financial matters are no bother to me. They're handled by a penny-pinching old solicitor by the name of Ian Carney. And mine was a contented life. Until, that is. Until a long-forgotten uncle died and left me some property he'd owned but never lived on up in County Fermanagh near Inniskillen. A place known as Devilstone. And then... But let me digress for a moment. I should say, let me seem to digress for a moment. And remember this, please. For it may have much to do with the strange, terrifying tale I'm about to tell you. Deep under St. Michael's Church, here in Dublin, is a crypt. It possesses most amazing properties. In it lie scores of bodies in a state of perfect preservation. Albeit they are hundreds of years old. The old ones used to say it's due to some wondrous form of black magic. But modern science, modern chemistry, has exploded that ancient belief. Has shown that certain gases generated by the unusual composition of the dark, dank earth in which the crypt is located, those gases have produced this amazing phenomenon. Very well. Now, a few days ago, I called Mr. Carney, my solicitor, on the telephone.
I've been hoping you'd call me, Timothy. I wish to speak with you about that house and property in County Fermanagh that your uncle left you.
Well, I've certainly no desire to move away from Dublin, Mr. Carney, so I've decided to rent out the old place.
Rent it out?
And why not, sir?
You really think you can?
Well, I'm quite certain I can.
I doubt it.
Well, as a matter of fact, an American couple by the name of Stoker left here only yesterday for a look at it.
I see.
I expect they'll be back here a moment now to agree to lease it for the summer.
Timothy, you showed them the pictures and description of the place?
Yesterday morning. They were so intrigued by them, they were all for signing a lease then and there.
You'd better to have taken their money and let them do it, my boy.
Oh?
Aye.
Now, I'm sure I don't see why. Well, surely they're entitled to look at the place over before they take it. After all, Mr. Carney, never having been there myself, there wasn't too much I could tell them about Devilstone.
Exactly as it should be, Timothy.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand you, sir.
I mean that now, my boy. You will never rent it to them, nor to anyone else who goes there.
Why not? Now, why do you say that, Mr. Carney? Well?
You don't know?
Well, of course I don't know.
Then perhaps your tenants, I should say erstwhile prospective tenants, will tell you, if you ever see them again.
Now, what do you mean by... Oh, excuse me a moment, Mr. Carney. Yes, what is it, Evans?
I beg your pardon, sir, but there's a Mr. Stoker here to see you.
Stoker?
Yes, sir. And if I may say so, he appears to be quite excited about something, rather angry.
Hello?
Shall I tell him you're busy and suggest he see you another time?
Timothy?
Yes?
No, Evans. Have him come in, please.
Very good, sir.
Hello, hello, Timothy.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Carney, but I've someone here to see me.
Now about Devilstone, Timothy.
I think I'd better call you back.
Very well, if you like. But there is something about Devilstone, its history, that you might not be cognizant of.
All right, well, I'll get back to you shortly.
Timothy!
Goodbye, sir.
Well, at least you didn't try to skip out on me.
Mr. Stoker, how are you? Nice to see you again.
Oh, it is, eh?
Did you and your wife get over to look at Devilstone as you'd planned?
We certainly did. And by heaven, Martin, if this is your idea of some practical joke...
My what?
Sending me alone to that ungodly place would have been bad enough. But my wife... Martin, you ought to be horsewhipped.
No, wait, please.
I'll have you know that as a result of your having let her go there, you and your twisted sense of humor...
What?
What is the matter with you, anyway? The poor woman nearly went out of her mind.
Mr. Stoker, I just...
She still hasn't recovered from it. Sure, I got her back to Dublin all right. But the doctors ordered her to bed. Had to give her strong sedatives. Now, I warn you, young man, if she doesn't recover...
Now, just a minute, Mr. Stoker.
Oh, don't bother, Martin. The less you say, the less I have to see of you from here on out, the better. Here are the keys to that place.
Now, look here, Mr.
Goodbye, Martin. If I ever see you again, it will be in a court of law.
Now, believe me, Mr. Stoker, I don't know what you're talking about. What are you so upset about?
Oh, you don't, eh?
Do you mean to say there's something wrong with Devilstone?
And do you mean to say that you, the owner of it, don't know?
We don't know what, sir?
You don't know that ungodly place is haunted?
What?
You heard me. Haunted!
Could I possibly have heard right, sir? Haunted? Was that what he said, Mr. Martin? Haunted?
Yes, that's what he said.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. But really, really, it's too amusing.
It's perfectly all right, Everett. You go right ahead and laugh, and I'll join you. Well, that's about an absurd excuse I've ever heard.
Excuse me, sir. You don't think he meant it.
But the Devilstone is haunted? How could he? Haunted houses went out of fashion 100 years ago. No, Everett, it was simply a silly excuse for not leasing the place. Well, now that he and his wife have had a look at it. But what an excuse. But does he think that we Irish are nothing but a lot of stupid, superstitious idiots?
Quite right, sir.
What?
I mean, of course not, sir.
Well, anyhow, it's completely ridiculous. So we'll simply forget it. Forget about the Stokers. Place an advertisement in the papers and find ourselves some other tenants.
Yes, sir.
Maybe we'd best reduce the rate on it a bit. Perhaps that's what scared them off.
No, that could be, sir.
Or who knows? Perhaps Devilstone isn't in as good condition as we've been led to believe. But can you imagine anyone coming up with an excuse so patently absurd, so completely asinine, and so utterly foolish, and expecting us to believe him, to take him seriously?
Yes. What is it, sir?
Everts, the truth now.
Yes?
Do you believe? Do you think? Possibly. Oh, no. No, of course not. It couldn't be. And yet, could that have been what Mr. Carney was talking about, or at least implying?
Mr. Carney, the solicitor?
Yes.
But Mr. Carney seems to be a man of good sense.
He was so definite about it, though. When he told me I should have let them do what they wanted after they saw the pictures, sign a lease immediately.
Before they even saw Devilstone?
Yes, yes. They would have, you know. He would have signed and paid a couple of months' rent, and Mr. Carney said I was wrong in not letting them do it, in not getting what I could, and immediately.
Would it have been completely ethical, no?
You mean if something is wrong with the place?
But haunted, sir.
No, no, of course not. Ridiculous.
Oh, of course.
And yet, well, there's one way to find out.
Yes. Shall I put in a call to Mr. Carney, sir?
No. By doing that, I'd be admitting that I might believe in such ridiculous possibility. No, Everts. You and I will drive up to Devilstone and we'll investigate ourselves.
Capital, sir. A splendid idea.
How you like it, eh?
Well, never having seen the place, either of us, and after Mr. Stoker's reaction to it, it might be quite exciting, sir.
Let's see now. If we leave right away, we should be able to reach Devilstone by nightfall.
Yes, sir.
So watch the car and a couple of flashlights, too.
Very good, sir.
And perhaps I'd better take along a pistol, just in case. And of course...
What, sir?
Well, to conduct our investigation in the ghostly place in style, we'll take along one of the dogs with us. Say, Red Kim of Heatherscote.
An excellent idea, sir.
Now, let's get underway.
Yes, sir.
Well, Everts, if the man at the petrol station told us right, the rambling old mansion you now see before you is Devilstone.
Yes. I see.
Now, what kind of a reaction is that?
Not a gloomy old place, if I may say so, sir.
Now, don't you start conjuring up some ghosts.
Even Kim apparently finds nothing particularly friendly about it.
Now, look, Evans. If you're going to become superstitious about Devilstone...
Oh, no, sir.
Come along, we'll have a look at it. Come along, Kim. Come along, boy. Now, let me see if I can unlock this door.
Yes, sir, here. I'd hold the flash on it for you.
Good. I believe this is the key. Well, the door is already ajar.
Why, yes, sir. So I see.
Well, come along, you two. Come on, Kim.
He's protesting rather vehemently, sir.
We'll just get him inside and we'll close the door.
Yes, sir.
Kim! What the devil's the matter with you? Oh, come now, boy. Are you a dog or a mouse?
He most certainly is frightened of something, sir.
Yes. He doesn't look like a ghost hunter crouched down there in the corner that way.
And if I remember the pictures correctly, this door here should lead to a small enclosed court, sir. Oh, and my word.
Right. Just another night bird, Everts. Don't let it bother you. Now, do you mind telling me why... Well, why did you do that?
I beg your pardon?
What? Why, you're still over there at the door. And yet... I distinctly felt something or someone bump against my shoulder.
And I thought someone walked on past me. Look here, Mr. Martin.
Yes? What is it?
In the mud, out there in the court. Shine your light on it, sir, where mine is.
Why, yes. Footprints. But big ones. And fresh.
And do you see? More of them are being made even as we look at them.
No.
Yet there's no one there to make them.
Impossible.
I know, sir.
But you're right, Evans. You're right. They're back inside now, and quickly.
Yes, sir.
Now, whatever is making those footsteps can't follow us.
It does feel a bit safer in here.
No wonder Kim is frightened. There were things like that going on. But why? And how?
Do you suppose, sir, that one of the old lamps could be lighted?
Well, if they have any oil in them. And it shouldn't take us long to find out if they... Now, wait a minute. Now, what are we acting this way for? It's trickery, that's all it is. It's trickery.
But by whom, sir? And why?
Well, that is something we shall have to find out. Now, where is Kim? Oh, there he is, still in the corner.
Sick with fright. Do you suppose, sir?
No. Nonsense. Whoever it was that scared Stoker and his wife out of here is trying to scare us now. And I mean to find him out.
Yes, but the dog, sir. And if it's true about them and that there is a ghost...
Nonsense. No. We'll just look about here. Where? Now what's the matter?
That door. At the other end.
What?
Behind you. It's opening by itself into a small room beyond.
Good. Then we shall start our investigation in that room. Well, are you coming?
Yes, sir.
Oh, clumsy. Now you've dropped your flashlight.
What? I didn't, sir. I didn't. It was knocked out in the hand.
It what?
Honest it was, sir. I swear it, sir.
Now, Evans, don't be silly. Go on back in there and get it.
I really rather not, sir, if you don't mind. Oh, the door. It's closed by itself. And now we're locked in.
Oh, we are, eh? Who did this? Who closed this door? Who's there? Who's there, I say?
Same one.
What?
Same thing.
What are you talking about?
The same thing that struck your shoulder, that made the footprints in the mud, and that frightened poor Kim so badly.
And frightened you, too. Well, I say it's trickery. Trickery. It has to be. Who's doing this? Answer me. Answer me.
You'd best be gone.
What?
You'd best be gone.
Yes. Yes. I guess we'd better.
Yes, sir.
No. Not a bit of it.
Please, sir. Please, in the name of heaven, sir.
No. We're going to stay right here, Evans, until we find out.
You'd best be gone.
No. Not until we learn just what's going on and... Where's that voice coming from?
I've tried to warn you.
Oh, please, sir.
They have tried to scare us, that's all. Tried to scare us.
Yes.
Yes.
So that you'd leave this place.
Why?
Because if you do not, you will suffer the same fate as the dog.
Kim? Fate? What are you talking about?
Oh, look, sir. The door is opening.
Yes, look. In the light of the flash that was dropped in there.
Kim! Everts. Everts. Kim is dead.
Then, Mr. Martin. Oh, please, sir. I beg of you.
Who did this? Who did this?
Show yourself.
Yes, I will show myself. Look.
What? Oh, look, sir. Out of thin air.
Yes. I see him.
Mr. Martin.
Yes. All right. We'll leave. Come along, Evans. Come on.
Yes, Mr. Carney. I thought at first it was trickery or perhaps some kind of joint hallucination by Evans and myself, induced perhaps by the gloomy atmosphere of the old house and whatever it was that Stoker had said about his wife and her being so terrifying.
No, my boy.
But when it actually happened, that he actually appeared there before us out of thin air, this misty, tenuous, impalpable figure, and then when we found there wasn't so much as a little mark on Kim, the dog, who up to that moment had been as healthy as I. But why didn't you tell me about whatever it is in that inhabits that place when I talked to you on the phone?
I tried to, Timothy, but you cut me off. And after all, I'd known about it only as a legend from hearsay.
And he was a huge man and powerful, this ghost.
Yes, I should say it was Jason O'Flynn, your ancestor, who built the place for his wife. It was to have been her castle.
Was?
Yes. But the first day she sought to enter into it, she fell, tripped upon the threshold, she struck her head, and she never regained consciousness.
I see.
The doctor was summoned, did all he could for her, there in a smaller room off the main salon.
Yes.
But she died that night. And then Jason O'Flynn swore by the book that no one would live in that house but he, until his body turned to dust. He walked out of that little room then and was never seen again. And ever since that time... But now you know the rest.
Wait.
Yes?
Until his body turns to dust.
His own words.
And he wasn't seen to leave.
No. What are you thinking of, Timothy?
I'm going back there, Mr. Carney. Tomorrow, in daylight. I just don't get it.
And I certainly found no signs of hollow walls or hidden panels on the floors above, sir.
And yet, Everett, somewhere close to that small room.
Don't you think it best we simply leave the place and go?
No. No one but he.
What?
Until his body turned to dust.
What, sir?
And although there must have been other people about, he wasn't seen to leave. And to me, Everett, that means only one thing. Somewhere in this house lies the key to this mystery.
But we've been here most of the day, sir, and we've found nothing. And it's getting on towards dusk.
I know. But until I find some...
Sorry, sir. Let me help you. The old rug was so badly wrinkled, it's no wonder you tripped.
Wait. Heavens. Listen.
A very hollow floor, I should say.
Here. Help me fold this rug back.
Yes, sir.
Here now. And look. A sort of trapdoor. And fitted in the floor so tightly.
Yes.
And this. It looks like a seal around the edge.
Why, yes, sir. And a heavy lifting ring.
Well, then give me a hand. We'll see if we can raise it. Now.
Oh, it's very tight, sir.
Yes. But the seal is giving way a little. Put everything you have into it now.
Yes, sir.
Good. We made it.
A musty, fetid, horrid odor coming up out of that place.
Yes. Yes, Abbott. Like that in the caves, or the catacombs under St. Michael's.
You mean where all the bodies and...
Yes. Quickly now. The flashlight. Give it to me.
Here, sir.
Now. Look down there on the earthen floor below. Do you see? The wrists are cut. He killed himself.
No, it's he. It's the ghost that we saw.
Yes, Everts. The body of Jason O'Flynn. And so perfectly preserved as though he died only moments ago.
Oh, it's horrid.
Until his body turned to dust, he said.
So we know now. Now that we've found it. So please, sir, let's leave this place.
Wait, Everts. Wait. What do you see? Now the fresh air has reached it.
Oh. Oh, good Lord.
Yes. The color is leaving the cheeks. The pallor of death is taking its place. And yes, now, at long last, the body will turn to dust. No longer will Jason O'Flynn walk the night. Requiescat in pace.
Suspense. You've been listening to Devil Stone, starring Christopher Carey and Neil Fitzgerald, and written especially for Suspense by Jonathan Bundy. Suspense is produced and directed by Fred Hendrickson. Heard in tonight's story were Gilbert Mack, Walter Grisey, Reynold Osborne, and Frank Milano. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Walter Otto. Technical direction by Fred Cusick. Associate director, Bernie Seabrooks. This is Stuart Metz speaking.
That was From Suspense and Devilstone, as aired on September 30th, 1962. One more little note. This was the last Suspense program ever aired. And now it's time for our last program. I don't really know much about this show, but I picked it because it had a neat sound in it. It's called Is There a Ghost in the House? And it was aired on June the 20th, 1963. The title of the tale is The Man in the Chair.
Is there a ghost in the house? Is called The Man in the Chair.
I have never been one for believing in ghosts. I've heard people tell of having seen them, but I've never thought much of their tales. To begin with, the ghosts didn't do anything interesting. And secondly, I was puzzled to understand the reason for the reappearance of some quite unremarkable old character in ghostly form. It all seemed a bit futile. My grandmother swore that her house was haunted. It had belonged to an old bachelor for years, and grandmother insisted that the old man's ghost walked about the house just as he had walked about it in life. She'd heard him shuffling down the passage to the kitchen, she said, and she'd heard him messing about with the pots and pans and banging the cupboard doors. I found myself wondering, what was the point of the old man's coming back as a ghost? Just to walk up and down a passage and make a clatter with a few saucepan lids? It was unenterprising, to say the least of it. I must say that I never saw or heard the ghost. And it wasn't through lack of trying. I sat in the kitchen night after night, waiting for a glimpse of grandmother's pet apparition, but nary a thing did I see. And the irritating part of it all was that as soon as my back was turned, so to speak, grandmother heard the ghost at it hard and strong. If I missed a night, the ghost was sure to play up. Well, this summer, I decided to go on a walking tour. I've never liked the idea of a planned holiday. I just felt like wandering about the country with no destination in mind and not knowing where I'd spend the next night. After about a week of this sort of thing, I found myself following the course of a river towards the end of a beautiful afternoon of sunshine, breeze, and shower. The footpath along the bank led me to a white house standing at the top of a gentle rise, and the house looked so snug and comfortable in its pretty garden that I was taken with a strong desire to spend the night within its walls. I wondered if I dare ask the owners for a night's lodging. They might receive my suggestion with very little enthusiasm, I thought. But then I spotted a weathered old board nailed to a tree near the garden gate, on which was painted the word Teas. Well, well, if they serve teas, I thought, they might go even further and serve me with a supper. And after supper, they might find a bed for me. So I went into the garden and walked up the path to the front door, which stood open. A pleasant-looking countrywoman was sitting in an old rocking chair just inside the door, and I made known to her my wishes. She welcomed me with a smile and said, yes, they kept a room for travellers. In fact, people sometimes spent a week with them, for it was a quiet place, and the scenery thereabouts was much admired. She would cook something wholesome and tasty for my supper, she said. There was nothing she enjoyed more than giving townsfolk a taste of real country food. And besides, her husband would soon be back from the fields, and he'd be hungry. This was hospitality indeed. No wonder people stayed at the White Cottage for a week at a time. And indeed, after my supper, and an excellent night's sleep in a feather bed, between sheets that smelt of lavender, I was in no hurry to resume my wanderings. I asked the good lady at breakfast if I might stay on for 2 or 3 days, and she smiled in a knowing way, as if my request was no surprise to her. Of course, she said. There was a boat I could use if I wished. It was moored at the bottom of the garden, and there was a summer house overlooking the river. People liked to sit in it and do nothing, she said. It was very restful. Restful it was. The birds sang in the grove of trees that encircled the summer house and flitted from tree to bush and bush to tree. Brightly coloured insects droned past the open windows, and the lapping of the water in the reeds lulled me into a doze within half an hour of my sitting down in a huge old cane chair full of patchwork cushions. When I awoke, I found that it was almost noon, and I found, too, that I was not alone in the summer house. There was a child in the room, a girl of about 7 or 8 years of age, who was sitting on a stool not more than a few feet from me. Her head was bent over a piece of needlework, and the sunbeams danced in her light brown hair. "Good morning," I said. The child gravely lifted her head and said, "I hope I didn't wake you up." "Oh, no," I said. "I'm quite ashamed of myself sleeping on a beautiful morning like this, and after a good night's rest, too." "You're very busy. Why don't you sit over there in the other big chair? I'm sure you'd find it easier to sew in the chair than on that footstool. Aren't you uncomfortable?" "No," she said. "I'm all right. And besides, that's the Major's chair." "The Major?" said I. "Oh, I haven't met the Major. Does he come for walks this way and rest in the summer house?" The child's face was serious. "He doesn't come for walks," she said, "because he's dead." This was so unexpected that my face must have shown bewilderment, for the child went on, "You mustn't mind him. He won't do you any harm. He just likes to sit here. I've often seen him." "But how can that be if you say that he's dead?" "I don't know," said the child. "I don't know how it can be. But he does sit here because I've seen him." There was no answer to this, so I said nothing. Presently the child folded her needlework, got to her feet and walked to the door. "I shan't be long," she said, and then she was through the door with one of those quick movements which children make when they're eager to be off doing something else, and I heard the sound of her little feet on the path of bricks which led to the back of the house. Strange mite of a child, I thought, a strange waif indeed. And I found myself looking at the other old chair in the room with a new interest because of what she'd said about the Major. It was certainly a very old chair, older than the one in which I was sitting, and yet somehow it looked as if someone had recently been sitting in it. Who was this Major? What on earth had the child been getting at? "That's the Major's chair. He doesn't come for walks because he's dead. But he likes to sit here." I closed my eyes. The sound of the lapping of the water below the windowsill was setting my head a-nodding again. In a couple of moments I'd have been off in another doze, when something opened my eyes. My fingers gripped the arms of the chair, and I felt a tingling in the palms of my hands. My body was suddenly rigid, my senses all alert. There was no doubt whatever of the fact that the other chair was now occupied. And not by any insubstantial form. No ghostly wraith was this, no transparency, no apparition. Here was a solid shape, a creature of flesh and blood, a man. I was too astonished to reason with myself as to how the man had got himself into the chair without entering the room by the door. I sat motionless, taking in the details of his appearance. A grizzled head lay back on the cushions of the chair, and the eyes in that head were staring out at the blue sky and the fluffy white clouds that floated above the trees. There was an expression of peace and contentment on the features of the old man, and as I watched him, the breeze ruffled his side whiskers and caught a stray wisp of hair that fell across his forehead. He was wearing a tunic of a dark green material, and his legs were thrust into jack boots. The leather was old, but polished again and again it must have been, for it gleamed with a rich ebony luster. The trousers were piped at the side, and the sleeves of the tunic were braided. Everything bespoke the military man. Here, undoubtedly, was the Major. But, and by now the shock of my first great surprise having worn off, my powers of reasoning were coming into play. How had he got here? What was he doing here, dressed in that costume of a bygone age? Why, he himself was no contemporary. Those side whiskers, nobody wore them today. Certainly nobody wore them in such profusion. Such was the fashion, how long ago? 1850? 1860? And yet, here was the man himself. And I assure you that nobody could have mistaken the Major for a ghost. He was as substantial as the chair he sat in. He was a living, breathing human being. I expected him at any moment to turn his head and address me. There was a light footfall at the door, and a figure came running into the summer house. It was the child. She stopped abruptly as soon as she saw the Major. Then she turned to me. "You see," she said, "I told you it was the Major's chair." Somehow I found my voice. "Yes, you were quite right," I said. And I waited for the old man to incline his head, to make some movement, some acknowledgement of the sound of our voices. The child must have divined my thoughts, for she said, "He can't see or hear us. I told you, he is dead." There was something quite gruesome in this matter-of-fact statement by a slip of a child, when the man in the chair was obviously so very much alive. "You're frightened of him, aren't you?" said she. "I wish you wouldn't be frightened of him. I'm not." And she sat down upon her stool with great composure, and pulling her needlework from her pocket, she bent her head over her task and resumed her sewing. The minutes went by. I was convinced that I was part of a dream. I simply had to prove to myself that I really was awake, that I was alive, that I could exert myself. So I got up. The child said nothing. I walked to the door. The child didn't look up from her work. The Major was still staring into space. I stepped out of the summer house into the sweet-scented garden and drew the fresh air into my lungs in great gulps. I was not dreaming then. I walked briskly through the garden to the door of the white cottage. The countrywoman was gathering sweet peas, and her arms were full of flowers. "Tell me," I said, "how was it that I didn't see your daughter last night?" "My daughter, sir? I have no daughter." "But the little one in the summer house, about 7 or 8 years old, surely she's your daughter?" The woman looked at me with puzzled eyes. Then her expression changed, and she laughed. "Oh, you've been having a nap down there, sir," she said. "You've been dreaming, that's what it is." "And the Major?" I said. "What of the Major?" "Major, sir?" Again those puzzled eyes. "It's all right," I said. I must have been dreaming." Her face cleared again. "There's a nice leg of lamb for your midday dinner, sir. I hope you'll be feeling hungry." "Yes, rather," I said. Then I'll be picking a bit of mint for the sauce. She smiled and left me standing at the door. On an impulse, I ran back to the summer house. As I'd half expected, it was empty.
Well, folks, that was our last show that we just heard. Is there a ghost in the house? The title of the tale was The Man in the Chair, and the story was aired on June the 20th, 1963. I don't know very much about the show. I just had it somewhere on my computer. I will say the neat thing about the feature presentations from the Weird Circle and Suspense that I find awesome is that both ghost stories are ghost stories, but they're not traditional, normal ghosts that just haunt a place because they're dead. There's circumstances that involve dealing with the problem of the hauntings. Well, my friend, I hope you had a fun, wonderful evening in this scary part of my den. But now, I pass the mic to Louise so that all of us can chat and have a peaceable, fun, happy evening. Maybe. Peace out.
Okay, Max. Thanks a lot and great work as usual. That's it. It's over. We're done. So it's now time for me to wrap things up and shut things down for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. But don't worry, we will be back again next week. You know where, you know when, and you know how to find us. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them to the director, Miguel Amaro, at michaemeli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.